Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Erin Morgan.
And I'm Stacey Sage. And we work for the members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization. Today, we have Brody Berrigan here with us. Brody serves as the Senior Director of Government Relations and Farm Policy at the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, CFA. Brody is here with us on Flock Talk today to talk about tariffs between the U.S. and Canada and what that means for farmers in Ontario and across Canada. Thanks for joining us on Flock Talk, Brody.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here. Nice to meet you both.
Well, thanks so much, Brody. And can you start off by telling us a little bit about your experience in the agricultural sector and with government, and then what brought you to the CFA?
Yeah, sure. I would be happy to. So it's a bit of a second career for me, to be honest with you. I put about 15 years into a career in the Government of Canada, the Federal Public Service, in a number of different capacities and departments, ending up as an executive at Employment and Social Development Canada, so more like labor and skills development. However, during my career in the public service, I worked for a few years at a department called the Privy Council Office. I'm not sure how much you know about that or your listeners know about that organization, but it's basically the department that supports the Prime Minister in delivering the government mandate and works very closely with ministries across the government. And my files, quote unquote, as they're called in government speak, were agriculture. So when I started, they handed me the agriculture department. So I worked for 3 years very closely with AFC on quite a wide range of different files. The original CPTPP trade agreement, I worked on some of the five-year FPT framework agreements, a lot of risk management, and I really loved it. I just found the files super interesting. The people were great. I was very, very pleasantly surprised. And so I think that left some warm and fuzzies with me as I continued on my career. And then when I decided kind of at that midway point, about 15, 16 years, that I wanted to try something a bit different, I kind of had in the back of my head the agriculture sort of space that I had worked in briefly in government. I took a couple of years off. I worked at a thoroughbred horse ranch for a little while. I worked for a seed company for a little while, just hauling soybean and corn seed all over Ontario. That was a great experience. Did soil sampling and yield estimates and that sort of stuff. So quite a shift from like boardrooms and sort of executive meetings to that scene, but I really, really loved it. And then eventually I went back to school. Actually, I did a diploma at Algonquin College's Business Agriculture program. And yeah, it was like a 2-year diploma program. And then that eventually led me to the CFA. And I've been here ever since. Yeah.
Sounds like a really interesting career.
Yeah,
it was good. I mean, the CFA is, I'm sure your listeners know the CFA, but it's Canada's largest general farm organization. And we represent all of the provincial and territorial general farm organizations, as well as a number of national commodity organizations, including the National Sheep Network. Mm-hmm. And we are an advocacy organization. So we exist and thrive and live in Ottawa, the area, the National Capital Region, to represent the interests of Canadian farmers, producers. And so it's really a nice marriage, I would say, of my former experience and skill set as a public servant, where you're trained and grilled on good policy development and good briefing and how to communicate and how to do, you know, good policy analysis and all of that good stuff. And then my re-education and some of my more practical experience in the agriculture sector. So it's worked out really well, at least from my perspective.
Amazing.
Nice. So with that said, you have been watching the tariff challenge for a while now, and we know you don't have a crystal ball. So what do you think we can expect from the U.S. in the next few months with respects to tariffs?
I don't think the U.S. knows what to expect with respect to U.S. tariffs over the next several months. I think that's sort of the unfortunate reality of the situation right now with respect to this tariff situation, is that there is a very, very high degree of uncertainty. I mean, everyone, I think, can appreciate that fact just by virtue of the bombardment of updates and new ideas that keep flowing through social media challenges from the executive branch of the US government right now. It's really, really hard to predict. And I don't mean to be flippant about it, but it is a very, very fluid situation. And so we are following it very closely. And I think what we're doing is focusing on what we can control and some fundamentals, just in terms of gathering information and working with our counterparts in the United States to try and elevate the awareness of the potential negative impacts of tariffs on U.S. producers and businesses and consumers, for that matter, where we think that message will resonate the loudest.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd like to come back to that in a minute. But from a high level, what impacts will we see from tariffs on agriculture in the short term if they do happen at the beginning of March?
Yeah. So impacts, I mean, first of all, there will be very significant impacts. I think everyone understands that and acknowledges it. And it's not something you can sugarcoat just by virtue of how deeply the Canadian and American economies are integrated. And so much of that is agriculture specific. It would and will be quite substantial in the event that it happens. I think that the specific nature of those impacts will vary, though, depending on the industry and the timing. Some are, like if you look at ornamental horticulture, greenhouse, for example, very perishable products, very, very heavily reliant on trade and exports with the U.S. They're already feeling the effects without any tariffs even having been put in place, because the mere signal of intent or threat of tariffs has already started shifting some of those supply chain patterns with some of the suppliers and orders we're hearing in the U.S. So it'll be quite varied, I would say, depending on the industry. I do know, you know, from the sheep side of things, we do export quite a bit of live sheep to the U.S. I think the most recent statistics that I've seen are from 2022. So you folks probably have more updated numbers, but that's over 2 million and almost 32,000 live sheep that go just to the U.S. Annually. So it will certainly have an impact. I know that there's been a lot of discussion around mitigation and even trade diversification as potential mitigation solutions, like ways to soften the blow. But that is not going to be a silver bullet solution, and it is not going to be something that we can flip the switch and implement in the short term. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to understand, as I know many of your listeners and producers do, that the reason we have that high degree of integration is because of our proximity, and it's built incrementally over decades and decades. So it's not something that we can change. Another sort of impact that I know we will see and are seeing is a shift in some trade patterns. So notwithstanding the fact that trade diversification more broadly is a longer term strategy, I think that we will see, if tariffs go up, a redirection of some of those products to the Canadian market. So instead of a north-south, it'll be more east-west. I know there's been a lot of attention on breaking down interprovincial barriers to trade recently. I think the government of Canada is very seized with that as an opportunity. And in many ways, I think it is an opportunity to address many of the barriers, which we've had a really hard time pulling down over time. I think probably because it was so easy to ship a lot of these products to the United States. But that will also take a little bit of time, I think. And it will have an impact on prices. You can just imagine, I mean, I don't want to belabor the point too much, but in the ornamental horticulture side, which is being impacted right now, so much of like flower season, we just had Valentine's Day, which is a huge like busy time for that particular sector. You know, you can think about all of a sudden products not going to the United States and flooding a domestic market, like what that would happen on prices domestically. All of a sudden you have a huge surplus, an increase in supply. And without growing, you know, the size of that pie, that market share, that'll put downward pressure on prices. So I can't tell you whether that same effect would happen with that over $2 million worth of live sheep. And you know, I know that there's like lamb skins and lamb products and all kinds of other sort of products associated with sheep products. But it is something to keep an eye out for.
Well, thank you.
4 years is a long time to endure market instability from a Trump government. What would you say are some potential longer-term impacts of trade disruptions with the U.S.?
Yes, it is a long, and it's very discouraging when you think about it, right? That 4 years
bleak.
Of this. One thing I will say is, if I can put a note of, add a note of optimism onto this, Brooke Rollins, the new Secretary of Agriculture, was just confirmed late last week. That is actually a very positive step. You might not think so because it might appear as an entrenchment of kind of executive power and the current agenda. But what it does is it gives you a person that you're actually trying to connect with. And so even for our counterparts, that when we spoke to American farmers, they are waiting, or we're waiting for Ms. Rollins to be confirmed so that they can start their internal sort of advocacy. And then once you can do that, you know, you develop a bit of a foothold, you can build a relationship, and hopefully, in theory, you can start to channel the direction of some of that policy in a way that would hopefully be less disruptive and damaging. Having said that, I think undoubtedly there is a huge risk, like reputational risk, associated with some of the things that are being discussed right now. I mean, a lot of potential damage to the relationship at the business level. I would also just like to reinforce, nothing has happened necessarily yet, right? I mean, there's a lot of threats. There's a lot of this push-pull. But we haven't seen it actually come, it hasn't taken effect yet. I mean, I know the government, the U.S. government announced kind of, again, new tariffs on steel and aluminum products, which are set to come into force in about, less than a month now, a few weeks. But nothing has actually taken effect yet. So we're still sort of waiting for the puck to drop, I guess, so to speak, on all of that. So there will be a number of short-term and long-term risks associated with this potential tariffs. But I think so much of it is uncertain at this stage that it's difficult to speculate. And I think it's probably better to sort of keep things from too much hyper-speculation at this stage. I do think that there will be an increased pressure on the government of Canada to open new markets. And as I said earlier, really focus on that trade diversification strategy. That will be a long game and something that I think Canada will need to invest a lot of resources into. But my fear, I think there is a general fear that over the long term, there is this trend towards increased isolationism and protectionism. So that this wave of reducing tariffs and trade liberalization may have subsided, and we're in a period now of retrenchment. And for a country like Canada that relies on trade, that relies on export markets to support our standard of living, our quality of life, our GDP growth, that is a challenging future, I would say. I'm not sure that we need to be without sort of hope on that front. I mean, there are a lot of other like-minded countries like ourselves that are interested and invested in maintaining some momentum around that liberalization, trade liberalization agenda. But it is certainly under threat, I would say, at this stage. And it's not just from the U.S. I mean, this is a trend that we've seen now for several years. Countries even like India or, to a certain extent, China and the U.S. has, even before the Trump administration was elected, has withdrawn to a certain extent from multilateral institutions like the World Trade Organization. Like, a good example there is the dispute resolution mechanism that exists at the WTO, which is basically just the deal that all of the signatory countries have reached on a way to solve disputes or problems. And because the U.S. has been blocking the reappointment of some members to that panel, it has not really been functioning for quite a while. And that was, you know, under the Biden administration as well. So there's a long-term trend there that I think is more problematic. And this move from the Trump administration and the instability associated with a lot of the threats around tariffs could further retrench that, or it might just shock the rest of the world back into reality where they see that that's not the direction that we all want to go and that nobody wins in that situation. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so now, like, let's talk a little bit about, you know, Canada's options here. Obviously we're not the big power player, but you mentioned relationships. You mentioned how you do have relationships south of the border, and whether that's just for gathering intel, whether that's, you know, for helping tell our story from within. Tell us a bit about that, and tell us, you know, what the government's options are right now, having been an insider at government. You know, retaliatory tariffs, does that make sense? Or, you know, what are the options for Canada?
Yeah, so I would just say from the CFA's perspective, maybe I'll just start a little bit with some of the stuff that we've been up to and then talk a little bit about potential mitigation and support options that the government has. So first and foremost, I think we've really just tried to increase the amount of outreach that we've had with our membership in particular, just to keep them apprised of the latest information that we're hearing on this particular file. We updated a landing page on our CFA website on Canada-US relations, which has some key messages on it, as well as some links to some kind of key upcoming events, etc. So it's a great place. I would encourage your listeners to check it out if you're looking for some information on Canada-US trade and or key messages. We've also made it a bit more of a prominent theme in our AGM, which is next week, actually. Our annual general meeting is going to be in Ottawa at the Delta on the 25th and 26th. And we have a number of interesting speakers coming. We'll have Chris Forbes, who's the Deputy Minister of the Department of Finance, and he has been leading a lot of the stakeholder engagement across the Government of Canada to provide updates on this situation. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a good opportunity to hear straight from the source kind of what's going on in terms of, he's also the deputy in charge of the department that would be setting up any sort of countervailing duties or retaliatory tariffs. Mm-hmm. So he'll have his finger on the pulse of what's happening there. We also have the ambassador of Mexico to Canada to speak a little bit about the situation. There's been a lot of focus on Canada-US for good reason.
Yep.
But there's another big player at the table here, right? Especially if you think about this in the context of the Canada-US-Mexico Free Trade Agreement, CUSMA, which was and is, at least in theory, still up for review in 2026. And I was very deliberate in that use of the word review and not renegotiation. Obviously, you know, the threat of significant tariffs kind of just blows the CUSMA sort of whole rules-based framework out of the water. Like, there's just no mechanism through CUSMA through which you can implement tariffs like that. It's not really in the framework of the agreement. But in theory, we are all still part of this trilateral regional trade agreement, which does have a number of rules of engagement, and Mexico is an important part of that agreement as well. We also are going to have a panel discussion on Canada's place in the world and what it means for Canadian agriculture, which will be moderated by Tyler McCann, the director of CAPI, the Canadian Agri-Food Policy Institute. Mm-hmm. And it will include some interesting panelists. Aaron Fowler, who's the Associate Assistant Deputy Minister and Deputy Chief Trade Commissioner. Paul Sampson, who's a former ADM at AFC, and he's now the president for the Center of International Governance and Innovation. We'll have Dr. Fenn Hampson, who's a professor in international affairs from Carleton University, and John Stackhouse, who's the senior VP of Royal Bank. And so they're going to be talking about this whole situation, and it's going to be a really good, I think, panel discussion. We also have the deputy minister of AFC, Lawrence Hansen, who will be in attendance. Anyway, I think it's going to be obviously a subject of close scrutiny and discussion at our upcoming AGM. We've also been increasing, as I've alluded to a couple of times, our presence in the United States over the past several weeks and months. Most recently, I was in San Antonio, Texas at the American Farm Bureau Federation Convention. The Farm Bureau in the U.S. Is basically the closest thing to an equivalent to the CFA that they have in the U.S. And was down there with Keith Curry, our president, and Todd Lewis, our first vice president, whom, by the way, was just recently appointed to the Senate in Canada. So he will not be an executive member of the CFA after our AGM, but we're very lucky to have a strong advocate for agriculture in the Senate in Todd Lewis, much like our former president, Mary Robinson, who's also a senator now. The Farm Bureau Federation Convention was a really great opportunity to go down and meet with the president of all of the state-level farm bureaus. Mm-hmm. So it would be like our provincial general farm organizations, and really talk trade and what it means for Canada, what it means for the U.S. And we've really pressed the point about how tariffs are just simply bad business. Like, nobody wins in a tariff war between Canada and the U.S. Actually, there are winners in a tariff war between Canada and the U.S. It's our main competitors around the world. So mm-hmm. your China's, Venezuela's, Russia, Belarus on fertilizer, it's really our main Brazil on soybeans. It's our competitors around the world who really win in a tariff dispute between Canada and the U.S., which weakens our integration and supply chains. So I think that message really resonated. And in fact, we did see a positive outcome from that, not just in terms of building out our relationship with the leadership at the Farm Bureau Federation. We did meet with Zippy Duval, the president, as well as his senior executives and staff. But we saw Zippy on social media just a couple weeks after talking about how tariffs would have a negative impact on U.S. farmers and ultimately on U.S. consumers in terms of increased food prices. So that has been a huge focus, I think, of our engagement over the past several weeks, has been just raising some of those key messages with our American counterparts. We also spent some quality time with our embassy representatives in Washington while we were at the convention. These are people with a lot of expertise and great relationships already in terms of some of the kind of leadership in the U.S. government. As a result, we managed to have a meeting, kind of an impromptu meeting, but a good meeting nonetheless, with U.S. Congressional Representative Glenn Thompson. He's the Republican leader of the House Agriculture Committee, and we talked a lot about trade, Canada-U.S. trade and tariffs and the negative impact it would have on the U.S., as I said previously. So I think our embassy representatives are a great resource for Canadian businesses to try and establish some connections and get good insight into what's going on south of the border. In terms of potential mitigation, so what do we do? What can we do in this sort of what, you know, a lot of people have called a bit of a David and Goliath situation between Canada and the U.S.? I think first I would say the CFA is in active discussions with the government of Canada on this very issue right now. So we're meeting with them. We have met with them. We will be meeting with them again, in fact, later today. to talk about some options on how we can support Canadian producers. So I don't necessarily want to go into too much detail in terms of what might come out of those discussions, but they are actively listening and engaged with us and other producer groups across Canada on how we can best support producers right now. I would say that the range of tools at our disposal, well, first of all, to your question, the government will put in place retaliatory tariffs. I mean, they've said that they will. They went so far as to publish a list of countervailing duties and potential tariffs on U.S. Products when the Trump administration threatened the first sort of round of 25% across the board tariffs and 10% for energy products. So that will happen. I think we can all be quite confident that that would be the first response of the government of Canada in an effort to try and dissuade the U.S. government from following through on tariffs, much like they did back in 2018, 2019, with the first round of steel and aluminum tariffs. And the idea there is to really try and hit consumers so that they raise their concerns with their representatives in Congress and the Senate. And they're being very surgical and tactical with that list, where it will have the maximum impact in the U.S. with the minimum pain for Canadian producers, because that has been one of the messages that we've brought to the government. We need to really try to ensure that any countervailing duties or retaliatory tariffs do not unnecessarily compound the negative impact on Canadian producers. Because you can imagine, you know, if you're relying on exporting your product to the U.S., whatever it is, but you also rely on imports from the U.S. for, you know, veterinary products, feed additives, and you're getting sort of taxed both ways, it really doubles down on the pain. And it does speak to just how integrated our supply chains really are in the agriculture sector. So that's one kind of key message that we've had. I think there's been a lot of discussion around this is going to cause some substantial short-term pain. And so loan guarantees and liquidity support will be one of the areas I think that you're going to hear a lot of producer groups talking to the government of Canada about potential support. Similar-ish to what happened and the type of response that happened during COVID-19, although I know that there was a bit of a mixed reaction to some of those that package of supports that were delivered during the pandemic. But it did teach us some lessons in terms of what types of levers could be pulled from the government's perspective and what couldn't. I think there's also going to be a push for a lot of enhanced market access. Again, going back to that trade diversification sort of thread, we do have a market access secretariat. We have the agri-marketing program, which supports a lot of, you know, marketing of Canadian agriculture products abroad. So we would be looking for the government, I think, to kind of double down on some of those efforts. And those are some quick and easy tools. And of course, there's, you know, there are risk management programs that we have. We know that they would not likely be sufficient in the face of across the board 25% tariffs on all kind of Canadian products, but we do have a suite of tools. So we could look to that suite as a potential first line of defense to support our agricultural community in the event of tariffs. That's sort of short term. Then there's kind of medium term issues that we could look at. So reducing regulatory barriers and streamlining business activities. You know, there are a lot of existing non-tariff barriers to trade in some already negotiated free trade agreements that we have around the world. So kind of areas where we have negotiated market access, but we're not actually fully using it because of other regulations that these countries have put in place to protect, you know, either it's the environment or, you know, food safety or whatever sort of domestic regulatory measures they've decided are priorities for them. And free, you know, accelerating the conclusion of free trade agreements with negotiations that are already well underway. So the government is already actively engaged in free trade discussions on a number of different fronts. There's a Canada-ASEAN free trade agreement, the CARICOM, so the Caribbean community. Indonesia is one where we're pretty far down the road. Mercosur is another. So there are some that are already underway and will be looking for the government to accelerate those to the extent possible. And then, you know, I think we'll always be, and have for a long time, but I think this will be increasingly important over the medium to long term, looking for the government of Canada to invest in trade enabling infrastructure. So that's a lot of transportation infrastructure, port infrastructure, rail, roads. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we need, and some of it is aging, to really facilitate an active and productive trade, trade economy in Canada. And so that's one of the areas that we're going to be certainly pushing the government to make investments to support our long-term interests.
Amazing. This has been very, very insightful, Brody. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you would like to share with Canadian farmers on tariffs and trade instability at this time?
I think I would just say that this is an area of profound significance and something that we cannot take lightly. The CFA is very engaged on this topic, very, very engaged on this topic, and will continue to be advocating in the best interests of farmers across Canada. However, I guess what I would say is, and certainly not to diminish the severity of the situation, I do think that this is potentially something that will be experiencing for the next 4 years, as we talked about earlier. So there's a little bit of a long game here, and sort of a, we need to be, there's sort of a balance between being seized with just how critical this is and how important it is and how potentially negative it could be for our businesses. At the same time, we have to not panic and no knee-jerk reactions. I think we need to be methodical. We need to be strategic. We need to play a long game here. And we do want to come out of this stronger at the other end. And so there will be opportunities over the next 4 years, it is our hope, to strengthen our agriculture sector, to make it more resilient, and to create opportunities, whether it's internally, whether it's new markets around the world, reducing barriers, investing in technology and innovation and equipment to make us more productive and efficient. Maybe this is the kick in the butt that we needed to accelerate some of these things. So it's understanding and appreciating the severity of the situation and not underestimating it, while at the same time being strategic, looking for the long game, and seeking out opportunities where they present themselves. So anyway, I hope that's helpful. That's our sort of view.
Wonderful. Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Brody. And to our listeners, if you would like to learn more about this topic from the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, they do have a Canada-US relations and trade fact sheet available on their website. Visit www.cfa.ca/Canada-US Agriculture. We'll share the link in our show notes. Hi, Aaron. What's new with Ontario sheep farmers?
Well, we have a super exciting announcement that probably most of our members have heard, but I think it's really important to say thank you again to the Conservative government for $100 million for the risk management program. This one is near and dear to my heart because I have been working on this particular advocacy effort since the year after my 19-year-old son was born. So it's very exciting for me that the risk management program now has $250 million for producers. And the $100 million that was announced, we'll see $30 million of it in this particular crop year, so 2025, another $30 million in 2026, and the remaining $40 million will roll out in 2027. So it'll be a fully funded, provincially fully funded program in 2027, which is just really exciting news. And there's more information on the Ontario Sheep Farmers website, so you can check it out under our news section. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Flock Talk, please subscribe to your podcast app to receive alerts for our future episodes, and please share our podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, at Ontario Sheep on X, and visit our website at ontariosheep.org. Thank you for listening.